Well, first let me introduce myself. If you happen to be in grade 6, 7, or 8 at Wabashin Catholic School, then I am the father of your teacher, Mr. Clifford, to be exact. Your teacher asked me to put something on tape about my experiences during the war years so that he could play it for you in the classroom on or about November the 11th, which is, of course, Remembrance Day. It was the year 1939 when Adolf Hitler started the Second World War by invading Poland and pushing his stormtroopers across the rest of Europe. I was a high school student, 16 years of age at the time, just a bit older than some of you are today. While Hitler subjected these captured countries to cruel and savage treatment, murdering, and trying to wipe out the Jewish population, imprisoning and torturing anyone who showed the least bit of resistance to him, night and day the people were taken from their homes and sent to forced labor and death camps. Before long, the Nazi Air Force, known as the Luftwaffe, was bombing heavily populated cities like London, England, killing hundreds of thousands of civilians. Their U-boats, which their submarines were called, roamed the North Atlantic Ocean in packs, torpedoing merchant ships and convoys of supply ships coming from America to Britain. It wasn't long before the big cities in England started evacuating their children to the safer places in Canada, and the dark days of 1940 and 41 got worse and more threatening. The Battle of Britain had begun. The heavy bombing continued to take its toll. Every night, cities like London, Birmingham, Manchester, port cities of Hull, Portsmouth, and Liverpool were totally aflame from saturation firebombing. During these horrifying days and nights, the Royal Air Force, with its few fighter aircraft, namely the Hurricane and the Spitfire, along with its brave band of pilots, faced the enemy and drove them back across the channel, thereby thwarting the planned invasion of England. During this time, Sir Winston Churchill, in an address to the nation and the world, made his now famous speech, in which he said, and referring to the fighter pilots who turned the tide in the Battle of Britain, and I quote, he said, "Never before has so much been owed to so few by so many." I was still in Canada at this time and determined that I was going to become a fighter pilot and that I would fly a Spitfire and be a part of the drive to push the enemy back across Europe, thereby liberating these suppressed, overrun countries. I was 18 in 1941 and began my association with the Royal Canadian Air Force, training as a pilot. The latter part of my training and wings parade took place not far from here, as a matter of fact, at Camp Borden. Penetang and Christian Island were areas where we practiced low flying in the winter of 1942. It was fun to come in at ground level in this area, and also Lake Simcoe and Kempenfelt Bay, and fly over the ice fishing huts. Well, I did get to fly a Spitfire eventually, and I was thrilled at the way it performed. You could make it do anything: climb, soar, dive, roll, loop. Many of you, I'm sure, have watched gulls and hawks and eagles and wished you could fly like that. Well, let me tell you that flying a Spitfire was just about the closest you can come to it. After the Allied invasion of Europe, starting at Normandy, a group of Spitfire pilots were along with myself, were sent to Gloucester, a place called Aston Down, to convert to a different type of aircraft, a plane called the Hawker Typhoon. It was a high-tech development by the designers of the famous Hurricane, which was so successful on the Battle of Britain. We were assigned to a Canadian wing of the 2nd Tactical Air Force to work in close harmony at ground support to the British Liberation Army. As the Allied troops moved ahead, our airfields moved with them, using makeshift landing strips in farmers' fields. Sometimes we were so close to the ground fighting that the enemy was firing at us just after takeoff. We carried a half-ton bomb under each wing, and there were 4 20-millimeter cannons mounted on the wing. We dive-bombed from 8,000 feet. That's 1.5 miles up to ground zero, with a variation of high explosives to armor-piercing to anti-personnel bombs, depending on what our particular target happened to be. We had a never-ending assortment of targets, from railway marshaling yards, rail intersections, troop concentrations, rocket launching sites, enemy airfields, bridges, enemy shipping, and U-boat pens. A Typhoon aircraft was very proficient at delivering its load to this type of target. It had a 2,250-horsepower engine with a large paddle-bladed propeller, so you can understand why it was easy to build up a speed of 500 miles an hour while making a vertical dive on any specific target. The anti-aircraft fire was exceedingly intense during these maneuvers, and our casualty rate during this march across Europe was alarming. And my rapid promotion in rank accelerated to the point where I was squadron flight commander in short order. Well, I'm getting off on a tangent here, but before I sign off, I'd like to tell you about an incident that you may closer relate to. About 3 weeks before Christmas in 1944, when we were stationed at Eindhoven in Holland, we were doing a low-level attack on a vital target just inside the German border. Well, just as I was flying over the target after releasing my bombs, the 2,000-pound bombs from the aircraft ahead of me exploded prematurely, and the concussion blew my aircraft several hundred feet into the air and riddled the wings and fuselage with shrapnel. I was able to return to base safely, but my nose bled for 3 days, resulting in me being grounded for 3 weeks. During that 3-week period, I became involved in a number of things that normally would not be my forte. One of these activities was helping organize a Christmas party for the Dutch children. These children, all during the enemy occupation, were hungry and never knew what it was like to have a regular meal. When there was nothing else to eat, they even ate tulip bulbs. Their homes were always cold because there was no fuel for the stoves. In Holland, the Christmas celebration starts early in December with the arrival of Saint Nicholas, a bishop from Spain. He has 2 or more black Peters that are supposed to gather up any children that have been bad, and St. Nicholas has presents for the good kids. With the help of a local priest, we acquired a St. Nicholas complete with mitre and 2 black Peters, all in their proper attire. All 4 of us get into a small reconnaissance aircraft, and I landed in front of the screaming, excited bunch of liberated kids. When I switched off the engine, they They swarmed around the airplane singing in Dutch the traditional Christmas welcome. Everyone then went into the dining hall, where each child had a place to sit at the table. They had candy, a hot meal, fruit, and more candy, and even some to take home. I have never seen so many children so happy and excited. To me, this was the beginning of what appeared to be a very merry Christmas. And I'm sure that those children will always remember it that way. I went back on the flying roster on December the 21st, having recuperated from concussion and resulting nosebleed. On Christmas Eve, three of my fellow pilots got shot out of the air by enemy fighter Focke-Wulf 190. That night, Cardinal Bellinger happened to come by for a visit and celebrate midnight mass for us in a partially bombed out church. The next morning, Christmas Day, I was on dawn patrol. The enemy had broken through in the Ardennes area, just south of us, and the battle of the Belgian Bulge was in full swing. When there's a war on, Christmas Day is the same as any other day. But this time I'd like to thank you for listening and letting me explain to you why there had to be a war and some of the sacrifices that had to be made to put an end to it. I thank God that I have lived through 46 Remembrance Days since that war was won. On November the 11th each year, I solemnly remember the 100,000 Canadians that gave their lives to accomplish that victory. In particular, I quietly recite the names of pilots that I flew with, laughed with, and lived with, that were not as fortunate as me to return home. I remember them as they were then, and they shall never grow old. More. Again.
Did you come up?
Hey?
Did you come up?
Well, I don't know. Call him.
Hey, Robert, it's your mother calling. That's, my time is about 7:30. Your father and I are coming up tomorrow, and, we thought we'd go directly to your school from here. I'm not sure what time you get finished. I think it's about 3:30, so we'll probably go up to 400 or up to Wabashin. And unless we hear from you, we'll see you at your school, okay?